Welcome to the Album Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Andy, Don, and Dude.
We're all grown up. We're all grown up. This is the Album Nerds Podcast. I'm Dude. I got Andy and Don with me. Andy, you ready to look back on your youth?
Yeah, I got out the old photo album here. I've been flipping through, looking at my younger self. I pretty much look the same, I would say.
Do you? Oh, yeah. Well, you're a handsome man, but you would have been a freak of a child.
The beard on a six-year-old was a little disconcerting.
Don,
what's up?
Yeah, I feel kind of anxious. Remember in sixth grade when we all had to go into that classroom to learn about the facts of life and you're just kind of...
Yeah, I mean, you take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and there you have the facts of life. No, I'm still waiting to have my talk.
Still trying to figure that stuff out.
Okay, so this is the Album Nerds Podcast. We love albums, the album format, and talking about them. We've got a great show for you today.
Don't oversell it.
We're going to discuss three albums that touch on themes of growing up and coming of age and the struggles and tribulations there. Don's going to ask us a deep question. Then we're going to have some shout outs to some other albums and album related items that we're digging. And then, of course, we'll spin that wheel of musical discovery to find out what we're going to talk about next time. But this week, it's all about growing up.
Our little boy is all grown up tonight. Yeah! That's what I'm talking about!
Well, in the realm of popular music, albums that explore the themes of childhood, adolescence, and coming of age have long held a significant place in artistic expression. Through lyrical content and musical composition, these works can capture the complex emotions, experience, and transitions that define the journey from youth to adulthood. So today, each of us will present an album that deals in some way with growing up or coming of age.
Just getting old.
Yeah, getting old. So this was challenging in that finding albums that have that theme throughout more than a song or so, and also trying to ignore your own upbringing and the albums that you grew up with. So it was kind of a blurry line there for me. Mm-hmm. What other albums did you consider for your growing up pick that didn't quite make the cut?
Yeah, this was a pretty good challenge from Wadbot there. I did end up listening to a bunch of records that I thought had at least a couple songs that were relevant. The one I enjoyed the most was from Sharon Van Etten and her 2019 album, Remind Me Tomorrow. What initially drew me to this record is the great album art, which features, I assume is her childhood bedroom, just like strewn about with toys, and she's like hiding in the corner. Kind of like Green Nun on it. It has a great song on it called 17, which kind of looks back at that age, along with a song called Comeback Kid. I'm a fan of hers, but the album as a whole wasn't really enough in line with the theme. So I gotta do what Wadbot tells us here and stick to the theme as closely as possible.
There you go. How about you, Don?
Well, I was listening to an album from the Moody Blues from 1969 called To Our Children's Children's Children. So it's, they're going even a step further. So we're talking great-grandkids, right?
So those are probably kids that are alive now.
Good point.
Yeah. Yep.
From 1969. Probably, yeah, that's
right. Yeah. So it's their fifth studio album. I mean, it's not all about childhood and innocence, but there's some of that. But there's also some, it was actually inspired by the 1969 moon landing. So it's sort of like I think a message to children and, you know, where we're going and stuff like that. But I would say one of the better Moody Blues albums. How about you, dude?
Cool. I mean, initially I thought about the Smashing Pumpkins just because there's something childlike and painful in the music. So Siamese Dream was on my list, but ultimately it's just so damn long.
He used to be a little boy. Yeah.
And so I was thinking about the Beach Boys, who we recently talked about. The Beach Boys Today was the album from 1965. It had When I Grew Up to Be a Man and In the Back of My Mind, which are two songs really about growing up. And my parents had that record and played a lot when I was a kid. So I connected that with their growing up period. And mm-hmm. It also was the first time the songs weren't really about surfing, mm-hmm. Kind of the precursor to Pet Sounds. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, that didn't quite hit the note I was looking for. So enough about those records. Let's get into our choices.
You choose me?
All right, for my grown-up selection, we're talking about Kendrick Lamar and his 2012 album, Good Kid, Mad City. This is the second studio album for the hip-hop artist from Compton, California. His major label debut tells the story of a young Kendrick, referred to as K-Dot by his friends and contemporaries, as he navigates the troubles presented to him by the city of Compton, which involves women, drugs, peer pressure, and gang violence.
K-Dot is also the Kansas Department of Transportation.
Wow. Often confused, yeah, for each other there. Yes. All right, why don't we jump in here? I guess this is sort of the title cut. Yeah, it's Mad City. Sleeping in the living room of my mama's pet. Reality
struck, I seen a white car crash. The light pole, two niggas hopped out on foot. And I like that voice cracky stuff that he does on some of these songs. Adds to the youthful urgency.
Kind of like, yeah, Kendrick is a master of kind of manipulating his voice, and this record is features that heavily.
Kind of like Fred Durst, the voice cracky stuff.
Do not.
So many similarities, Don. Thank you for calling that out.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Well, that song there is kind of the culmination of all the events on the record, creating this sort of, I guess I would say, like monster character of Kendrick, kind of like his dark side emerging there. It's got that great, it's kind of like old school West Coast beat there, very reminiscent of Dr. Dre's sound. Mm-hmm. My clickbait headline for Good Kid, Mad City is Kendrick becomes Compton's angel in angel dust, rising above the neighborhood and the hip hop world. I think this is a very impressive record. I loved it when it came out. Coming back to it for, you know, 14 years, still sounds great.
What? It's been that long? Jeez.
This is an ambitious record, man. It deals with a lot of stuff, a lot of big issues, you know, just kind of around growing up, but also kind of like inner city life. And I think Kendrick does it so beautifully. He really presents a broad stroke picture of the environment he grew up in. And it's fun and it's engaging. It's just a good listen. But there's so much detail and intricacy to his lyricism, the production, the cool skits that are interwoven into the story. It really just presents like a beautiful package, and like that, you know, as only albums really can do, it kind of plays a little bit like a movie. Mm-hmm. And I am super high on this record. Maybe not his best album, but I think it's the one I come back to the most frequently and the one I enjoy the most.
Kept comparing it in my mind to Illmatic by Nas, just because it's sort of a similar theme, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of talking about how he grew up in the environment and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
But different coasts for right. one, and a completely different type of presentation here. Much more character driven, I guess. You know?
Yeah.
I don't remember. Did that have like a coherent narrative? Like, was it more just kind of thematic? Like, did it have like a ongoing story like this one? I can't remember.
Yeah, it was more like sketches of from the city sort of thing. This is more, I guess, more of a narrative story.
Yeah. I agree.
But you're right. They're both kind of about their cities and their effect on the people living there. All right, let's play another cut from the record here. This one that really directly deals with those kind of influences and those forces pushing on Kendrick. This is The Art of Peer Pressure. I never was a gangbanger. I mean, I never was stranger to the folk neither.
I really doubt it. Rush a nigga quick and then we laugh about it. Yeah, it's a pretty epic song early on in the album. So it depicts a day in the life of young Kendrick, and it's about the, you know, the peer pressure that is his friends, you know, place on him. It refers to them as the homies. So the story goes, you know, they're driving around in a white Toyota. As the day progresses, he's engaging in smoking and drinking, which is not something he typically did. They end up confronting rival gangs. They're harassing hookers, and then they actually kind of plan out and execute a robbery, which results in a police chase, but they, you know, they get away. And it seems like a turning point, I guess, in the story of young Kendrick. I guess he, you know, realizes that, you know, what the consequences, you know, could be if he continues on this path with his homies.
That sounded very unnatural.
Well, that's what he refers to them in the song.
Yeah, that's a direct quote.
Yes, I know.
My clickbait headline for Good Kid, Mad City is, now this is a story all about how Kendrick's life got flipped, turned upside down. That sort of trivializes what happens.
Yeah, a little bit.
But it is. I mean, because basically the events of the album, right, or the story, all take place in like one day. So it obviously is, you know, just a significant experience for him, and to make a whole album about it is cool. I mean, we're album nerds, and I think we all appreciate, you know, the idea of a concept album. And I know there've, you know, been several concept albums in hip hop, and I'm not all that familiar with them, but this seems like a good idea, or a well executed one anyway.
You know what I would like? I would like a concept album where the artist, like, you know, there's skits and there's interludes in albums. I would like it to be spelled out. Like in this case, I feel like it was actually fleshed out.
Yeah.
And you get what you came for. A lot of other concept albums, there's a concept that's loose and you have to struggle to find the threads that tie it together.
This feels pretty clear, though. Would you guys agree?
Like, oh, yeah. Yeah, even if you don't read up on it, I mean, if you listen, you know, to the lyrics enough, you get it. I mean, there's some confusion there. So, like, at one point, I didn't know if he killed somebody or something.
Yeah, some of the details are a little sketchy, but I think the general thrust of the story is pretty evident when that first listen.
Yeah, but overall, I mean, it's well executed. I struggle with listening to hip-hop from this era, and I think the fact that it had a coherent narrative kind of guided me through it, because it's also a pretty long album. You know, wasn't it like 66 minutes or something like that? So
it's a big bite to chew on there for sure.
Yeah, but I got through it and I enjoyed it.
All right, let's play one of the tracks here that was one of the bigger singles from the record. Deals with Kendrick and his friends kind of partying and having a good time, and the consequences that go along with that. It's swimming pools.
If I take another one down, I'm gonna drown in some poison, abusing my limit. I think that I'm feeling the vibe. Yeah, so we hear a little bit from Kendrick's conscience, which I think was a really nice touch. The conscience being the guide is such a great concept for how you get through, regardless of what kind of tough times it is as a kid. A lot of times listening to your conscience is the right path. And he stopped drinking and smoking weed around 16 or 17 for the most part, because he didn't like what he did when he was under the influence. And it's, you know, this song's about that pressure to basically swim in a pool of alcohol, do more shots, get ripped.
Yeah, keep pushing it further, kind of.
Yeah. So I read a little quote. He said that to Billboard magazine, "I know what happens to my family and certain friends when they get drunk and they smoke. They get out of their minds. They get violent. And that's in my blood." So yeah, I really connected with the song, especially because it sounds like a fun thing, and I'm sure a lot of people had a lot of fun
drinking and smoking to the song.
That was a really nice way of telling it. And again, if you really dig in and you hear that it's his conscience talking to him and all this stuff, that's when it starts to click that it's more than a party anthem. My clickbait headline to describe the album: from kid to street poet, Kendrick Lamar's raw and real journey through the heart of Compton. You can hear that journey from innocence to very hard won maturity. That wasn't easy to get to. And I think that's in contrast perhaps to some other people's upbringing. And it's important and sobering to get a real snapshot into what coming up can be like in different situations and scenarios. So when I first started listening to this, I felt overwhelmed. It was too long. There was a lot of content to try to absorb. And it ended up being worth it. I spent a lot of yesterday trying to get my mind right on this one. So I think I did.
Nice. Nice. Well, yeah, I think this album holds up very well. And it's one of those that kind of rewards you for deeper listens. The more time you put into it, I think the more you can get out of it. So I'm going to nominate this for the Album Nerds Hall of Fame, guys. I think it's at that level. What do you guys think?
These are tough for me, right? Because I don't know a lot of albums from this era, and I don't know a lot of hip hop albums from this era. So it's hard for me to compare it to others and to sort of identify its place in musical history. But I mean, it is a well executed album, you know, and it did keep my interest.
You can hear the gears turning.
This is the Hall of Fame material. Is the question, Donald?
Bitch, don't kill my vibe. All right, I'm gonna vote yes. Ya bish.
Okay.
Yeah, that's new. That's a new one. I don't know that one.
I like the ya bish. Yeah. Yeah, I'm with my homies on this one. It's a yes. For sure. I mean, when I started listening to this, I'm like, oh my God, this is overwhelming. And I've liked his other work too, other albums. I hadn't really dug into this one, but once I spent enough time with it, absolutely. This is a landmark type of album when it comes to our theme in particular today, but just pure storytelling and craftsmanship. A plus.
All right. Well, congratulations to K-Dot, all the various producers involved in this project. Good Kid, Mad City is in the Album Nerds Hall of Fame.
Before we get to our next growing up selection, why don't we hear from a friend of the show, Music Notes with Jess.
Hi, I'm Jessica Ann Katina. I've always loved music and surround myself with it every day. I've sung in choirs, took digital musical classes in college, and used to work in radio. To further share my knowledge and experience with others, I created this podcast, Music Notes with Jess, in 2019. I'm so fortunate of the listener growth and hearing back from some of the celebs I discussed in past episodes. That's why now I'm ready to expand. So let's have fun taking weekly music notes of throwbacks, modern hits, and media. Thank you. Talk to you soon on Music Notes with Jess.
Thanks, Jess. Be sure to check out Music Notes with Jess.
All right. Well, I'm going to take us on the interstate from the hood to the suburbs.
That didn't sound rehearsed at all.
Should have been a commuter train. Anyway, so my pick for a coming-of-age album is Arcade Fire's The Suburbs, which was released in August of 2010. This is the third studio album from the band, formed in Montreal in 2001. The band's had several members over time. The constants are Wynn Butler and his wife, Regine Chazan. Chazan? I don't know. It's kind of French.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Oui.
On this album, his brother Will appears on the album. The album's lyrical content is inspired by Wynn and William Butler's upbringing in the Woodlands, Texas, which is a suburb of Houston. So according to Wynn Butler, the album is neither a love letter to nor an indictment of the suburbs. It's a letter from the suburbs. So here's the opening and title cut, The Suburbs.
What was the name of the album?
What's it about?
It just makes me picture walking around the cul-de-sac in the morning, waving to everyone as they're getting their paper off the porch.
Yeah. Yeah, I do really like that opening cut. You know, it's just, I don't know, got that steady beat, the piano melody. And yeah, I think it captures that sort of nostalgic tone that kind of goes through it throughout the album. But it's also kind of bittersweet, you know, so it's not like a completely joyful song, which again, you know, pops up throughout the album. The lyrics deal with memories of youth spent in, you know, the suburbs, the loss of innocence and that transition from childhood to adulthood, also the passing of time. And I think are the themes of the entire record. There's also reference to a suburban war, you know, which is sort of a confusing concept.
Yes, the gangs of Texas.
Yeah. I think they're called posses.
I think you're right.
Well, my clickbait headline for Arcade Fire's The Suburbs is, while Ben Folds was rocking the suburbs, Arcade Fire broods in the suburbs.
Nice.
There you go. You guys remember Ben Folds?
Yeah.
I do about remember him rocking the suburbs. Maybe I missed something.
This is his most famous song.
Yeah. Well, this is not my last reference to Ben Folds in this episode, so
great.
Stay tuned.
Super.
Yeah, it kind of, I think, fluctuates between sort of glorifying maybe childhood, but also maybe looking at it critically and, you know, it seeming sort of sad. But also, you know, there's the theme of kind of aging and moving on with your life. Typical of Arcade Fire, just really dramatic, you know, like I mentioned subtlety, you know, in the Kendrick Lamar record. And there's not much subtlety with Arcade Fire either.
Everything kind of gets like built up to these sort of like orchestral grandiosities. Everything.
Well, kind of like when you see a new subdivision in a suburb being built. That's kind of what it is. Musically, yeah, what it is.
Forever,
you know?
Forever expanding. The sprawl is real.
Yeah. So, but, you know, musically, I mean, you know, elements of indie rock, there's some disco in there. There's a lot of kind of 80s synth pop, new wave sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let's continue with the record. Here's a track called We Used to Wait.
Initially, I thought maybe it would be about waiting until you're married. But it's not. It reflects on how technology has changed the way we communicate and experience the world, and how growing up in the modern era is different than what Win Butler is talking about. He said that the song was inspired by a nostalgic letter writing romance he had in high school, where he would wait for letters over the summer. The opening line, I used to write letters, I used to sign my name, I guess became a viral snippet before the album's release. And the interactive music video uses Google Maps to incorporate viewers' childhood addresses to blend nostalgia with innovative web technology, as well as giving up your privacy. So good on you, people that got involved in that one.
Sounds really great idea.
I think my favorite line from the song is, you know, now we're screaming, sing the chorus again. So it's like we're so impatient now, like we can't even make it through verses anymore. It's just give me more chorus.
Yeah, exactly.
My clickbait headline to describe the album, Remember When We Had It All? The Suburbs by Arcade Fire shows how lucky we were growing up despite the struggles of youth. Now, you know, Don talked about the synth poppy, new wavy, nostalgic vibes to the style of the music, which I think helped me think back on my suburban days and how lucky I was. And today is pretty awesome as a result. Perhaps the album title should be changed to Privileged, I was thinking, especially in comparison to Mad City. This is Sunshine and Rainbows, right? I mean, boo-hoo. You know, like, what are you complaining about? You know, I could relate to it, but I didn't learn much from it, I guess.
To me, it feels like a very objective view where it doesn't feel so much like some sort of individual, but more of just like kind of how things were when I was growing up. It paints a very clear, I think, picture of that. It doesn't feel like it's biased one way or the other. Mm-hmm. But yeah, maybe it's not as personal of a story as you might expect.
All right. Well, let's move on to another cut. This is Suburban War.
You all have that feeling where you kind of meet up with a friend you haven't seen in a long time, and you're like, I hardly even know this person. They probably don't really know me that much anymore. I think that song is largely what Suburban War is dealing with there. My clickbait headline for the suburbs is, whether you're from Canada or Texas, the suburbs are enough to make anyone melancholy and slightly nostalgic.
Yeah, slightly.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely relate to this record and the things they're talking about. The suburban sprawl, you know, the mall and technology's influence, all those things are very much part of my growing up as well. I think what makes Arcade Fire interesting is more their sonic
tapestry.
Yeah, the sonic tapestry. Thank you, dude.
Yeah, there you go. they could hang their tapestry in their suburban bedroom.
Yes, be right at home with the Spencer Gifts toys and whatnot. But I think what they do best, I think there's more emotion communicated in the music here than maybe in the lyrics, at least for me.
I agree, yeah.
They do a great job of, you know, kind of bringing the energy up and down. There's some really good swells on this record. Tracks like Rococo, Suburban War, and the end of the record, I think, ends very strongly with this sprawl series of songs. Yeah, they're such an interesting group. It feels like very, you know, heady, polished, sophistipop, if you will, Don.
Yes.
But I think does hold up well after all these years. And this album was very highly praised, if I recall, at the time.
Yeah. Won a Grammy, record of the year.
Did it win a Grammy?
Yeah. Or album of the year, yeah.
I wonder what its competition was. Couldn't have been great.
I don't know. I think this is as good as any of the records that they put out. I mean, I think they do have a very good discography, but I really do enjoy this one. It's, you know, maybe it doesn't pull on the heartstrings as much as you might expect something that's more about nostalgia, but I do think it's a rewarding listen, at least musically for me.
Me too. All right. Well, for a melodramatic depiction of coming of age in the suburbs, check out Arcade Fire's The Suburbs from 2010.
Excuse me. I'd like to ask you a few questions.
All right, it's that time again for Deep Questions by Don. All right, so the filmmaker John Hughes is known for his coming-of-age movies. What's your favorite Hughes film?
Oh, there's so many good ones to pick from.
Mm-hmm.
But I will take the easiest one, which is one I watched, I don't even know, probably a dozen times. I feel like every day I'm sick from school, I end up watching Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah.
It is so choice.
It is. It is choice.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so many good lines, so many good moments. Just it almost feels like a part of my childhood to some degree, because it just feels like those moments, like the parade sequence and like he comes with his dad's car. I mean, going to the museum and the ball game. I mean, there's just like a lot of nostalgic moments.
It's a good day off
for me. Yeah, it's a good day.
So unrealistic
to do all that in one day. Yeah,
of course. Well, when you're Ferris Bueller, I mean, that's who I aspired to be when I was in middle school.
I think everybody did. Yeah. That was kind of the model, right?
I wanted to be Parker Lewis.
Parker Lewis Can't Lose was a TV series that sort of was Ferris Bueller-esque, and kids at school used to call me Parker Lewis.
Nice.
Which I took as a badge of honor at the time.
You can't lose.
Yeah, for me, I went with The Breakfast Club.
Also a good one.
But face it. You're a neo-maxi-zoom dweeby. What would you be doing if you weren't out making yourself a better citizen?
Yeah, this came out. I wasn't the same age as the characters in the movie, but it was like a blueprint for what high school was going to be like in my mind.
Detention all the time?
Detention.
I did serve whole day detentions. Yeah. At the end of the school year, if you had built up detentions and the year was going to end, you had to spend a whole day in a room.
Oh, yeah, well, you're picking on that teacher so much, right, Mr.
Blowers?
Yeah. I know. I deserved it, man. It didn't get any better with other teachers. But I apologize to you all, by the way. But yeah, the dialogue and the way that people, when they're in a tense situation like that, in high school, the clicks are such a big thing, or were when I was a kid, for it to break down the way that it did and them to just become people with each other gave me hope of what high school could be like and that people could get along and all that stuff. So love that movie. Again, great one-liners in that one as well. And just made life seem more cool and exciting than it actually turned out to be at that time. How about you, Don?
Yeah, I mean, I would say The Breakfast Club is probably my favorite film of his, and I think probably the one that holds up the best. But I'm going to mention an underrated one, She's Having a Baby from 1988, starring Kevin Bacon and Elizabeth McGovern. So, you know, about a guy who is kind of starting his career. He wants to be he's an aspiring writer, but he ends up having to take a job in advertising. But he's recently married, and he's kind of saying goodbye to his youth. So it actually kind of fits the theme of this episode. Right, because he's
right.
Sort of coming of age, but it's going from your 20s into being like a real responsible adult. Actually, in the film Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, there's a scene where somebody is actually watching television and She's Having a Baby is on the screen.
That's a Hughes film as well. Yes,
yes, yes, it is.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, what's your favorite John Hughes film? Let us know. Visit us on Instagram and Facebook, or leave a comment on our website, albumnerds.com.
I went with Tears for Fears with their 1985 album Songs from the Big Chair. Tears for Fears were formed in 1981 by Roland Arzabal and Kurt Smith, known for their synth pop and new wave sound, often exploring themes like social anxiety, emotional struggles, childhood trauma. That is a theme that is echoed in this album, Songs from the Big Chair. Why don't we jump in with the track Head Over Heels? That's how I feel about this album.
Yeah. Head Over Heels.
Yeah. This is their second studio album. While not explicitly about adolescence, it does deal with themes of emotional growth, healing from past traumas, and finding one's place in the world, which is definitely part of the growing up process. They kind of shifted from the dark introspection of The Hurting from 1983 for a kind of more mature sound, but also the inclusion of some hard guitars and synths and just more sound, more dynamic experience. The track itself, Head Over Heels, combines poetic lyricism. Like, if you get into those lyrics, they're actually quite beautiful, and there's more to it than just head over heels. There's some things to think about, like the line,
you keep your distance with a system of touch.
That's right. Keep your distance with the system of touch. I mean,
it's good stuff.
That's pretty good stuff. Yeah. The song Broken precedes this song on the album. They kind of intermingle, which I think is really nice touch as well. But yeah, just I think the video for Head Over Heels is what I thought about most, and just those feelings of instant crushes and trying to figure out how to express that or find the courage to do so. And that always stuck with me with this song. My clickbait headline to describe the album: the soundtrack to a changing world, songs from the big chair with growing pains and ambition. Captures
that's good.
All that anguish and introspection and that catharsis of growing up, and this album does that well. All right, so I briefly mentioned Broken. Why don't we get into that track a little?
Kind of like parts of the Head Over Heels collection of songs there towards the end of the record.
Yeah, I actually read that Head Over Heels actually kind of came out of Broken.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, on the record, Broken kind of bookends Head Over Heels. I think it works really well. It's a really cool, like, edgy electric guitar in that track, which I wasn't really expecting for this, you know, synth-heavy 80s record. Lyrically, definitely dealing about aging, and it has that great line, you know, funny how time flies at the end there, which feels so epic and cool. My clickbait headline for songs from the big chair is Tears for Fears, Pull Up a Big Comfy Seat at the Table. This is like very much, I guess I was initially a little hesitant to listen to this record because of all the commercial appeal. Like, they got these three massive singles on this record, which just kind of inundated my childhood. So I wasn't really that interested in hearing the rest of it, but the rest of it is actually really, really cool.
Yeah.
It complements those singles beautifully, and it kind of fits together as a very cohesive album, which I was not expecting, because I really was expecting just a couple hits. Mm-hmm. But it really does play well as a, you know, as like a 40-minute album.
Yeah. I've always loved those singles as well, Andy, but then every time I listen to this over the years, I always am surprised again at how well everything is tied together and the depth of sound.
Yeah. They really make it fit.
Yeah. I had this cassette when I was 8, and I used to just kind of fast forward to the singles because I didn't really get the rest of the album. But, you know, as with a, you know, more mature ear, you know, and the whole thing is just, you know, really good.
The other thing I would just add too is much of the 80s sound is there, that big synth sound and the drums. They kind of paint it with like a bit of angst and disillusionment, I would say, lyrically and even sonically a little bit as well. So it doesn't really feel like a big shiny record to me. It feels a little bit more disillusioned, I guess. Is a word I come back to, which I like. I think there's a little darkness to it, which is always appreciated.
All right, so why don't we get into one of those big songs, Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
So Everybody Wants to Rule the World is written by Orzabal, Ian Stanley, and Chris Hughes, who's the producer. I always think of Orzabal and Kurt Smith as being Tears for Fears, but that Stanley guy, who's the keyboardist, actually co-wrote a lot of the tracks.
I think that's important sometimes for these duos to have a solid group of musicians that they play with on a few albums, because then those people can start to help shape the sound.
So the lyrics address themes of power, control, and human ambition. Has that sort of that iconic, almost like anti-guitar lick, you know, it's just the... I don't know. I can't do it. But kind of heavy reverb and delay. Kind of reminds me of something the Edge would play from U2.
For sure.
Okay. Yeah. It'd be fun to walk into a guitar shop and just play that instead of Stairway to Heaven. I wonder if people would look at you weird. I didn't know this, but Joe Strummer from The Clash actually ran into Orzabal somewhere, said, hey, that song's a ripoff of the song Charlie Don't Surf. And Orzabal actually like just handed him some cash right there, and he's like, okay. Yeah. But I spent some time listening to Charlie Don't Surf, and I hear like similarities, but I don't really get the, you know, really get the connection. Hmm. Also, you know, I guess it seems to be the story with a lot of, you know, great pop songs. It's one that just kind of came together quickly. In fact, Orzabal didn't really like the song very much, but it was the producer, Chris Hughes. Yeah. Oh, it's our worst song.
It made us millions of dollars.
The producer pushed for its inclusion. So my clickbait headline for Songs from the Big Chair is Tears for Fears pop features form with the change in the weather. That's a reference to the song Mother's Talk, right? So my features form with the change in the weather. I guess if I had to explain it like this, it's really not an effective clickbait headline.
Shows how detailed and intricate the lyrics are.
So I know the previous album pretty well, the Hurting, and this is really a pretty dramatic departure. You know, it ditches a lot of the synth sounds, and you know, has a lot more guitar in it. And I think the overall treatment and the songwriting is more traditional. If we ever did like a theme of like albums that are dramatically different from the previous album, you know, this is one you could include. Mm-hmm. But yeah, one thing I'll say about Tears for Fears, and it really struck me, I think, because we're doing the Arcade Fire record as well. It's just the drama, you know, just like Orzabal is just such a dramatic character. The way he sings is just so over the top. Yeah. And mm-hmm. everything just seems so important and so
right.
So that's emotional. That's
how it is when you're like a teenager, right? I mean, everything's like the end of the world.
It really works.
Yeah. You know what? And one funny thing, the title, Songs from the Big Chair, comes from the 1976 TV movie Sybil, which depicted a woman with multiple personalities, but felt safe in the big chair that she would sit in is where some of her personalities would come out. And I think the songs on the album have different personalities. So I think that kind of fits. So don't forget about, of course, Shout, the rebellious, defiant personality. I Believe, the hopeful, spiritual personality. Listen, the introspective, reflective personality. I did a list of all the songs and their personalities, but since we didn't talk about those songs, I wanted to mention them. So yeah, this one has always been impactful for me, and I think fits the theme pretty well. And I'm going to nominate it for the Album Nerds Hall of Fame. All right, for me, this is probably one of the best pop albums of the 80s, but certainly of 1985. And, you know, they blended sophisticated songwriting and the innovative production with introspective themes, delving into, you know, universal struggles with power, vulnerability, human connection. And they proved that even in a decade like the 80s that was known for its excesses, that depth and meaning could thrive in the art form. That's what I think. What do you guys think?
Yeah, you know, if you had asked me a couple of years ago if I'd be a fan of Tears for Fears, I'd be like, what are you talking about? But like, I really do enjoy this record. And you know, we had that record a couple of years ago they put out. It was fantastic. And yeah, these guys are great. This album is really enjoyable. So yeah, yes for me.
Sweet. Yeah. I liked it at the time. And it's definitely an album that has grown on me. So, you know, I really recognize it for being one of the great works in that early to mid-1980s. So, I'll give them a seat, the Album Nerds Hall of Fame.
Seat at the table.
Welcome to the big chair now, fellas. All right. So that was Tears for Fears, Songs from the Big Chair, an Album Nerds Hall of Famer, but also a great album about growing up. Go check it out.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
All right, fellas, we've been digging a lot of records that deal with growing up and coming of age. What else have you been digging?
Hey, I got a couple of things here in my backpack.
Is it an Eastpak or a JanSport?
I had a JanSport growing up.
Ah, there you go.
Anyway, first up here for me is from Chicago-born rapper and producer Lupe Fiasco. He put out a new album called Samurai earlier this year, his ninth studio album. It's loosely built around the concept of, what if Amy Winehouse was a battle rapper?
Oh, of course. Who hasn't thought about that?
Apparently, he was watching a documentary on her, and that was something she alluded to that she might want to try, and this is kind of what that might sound like. Yeah, let's play the opening cut, Samurai.
What if Barry Manilow was a battle rapper?
I'd like to hear that, maybe.
Copacabana, bish.
Another one here from me is from the Glasgow, Scotland four-piece Primal Scream. Yeah, their 12th studio album out just came out recently. It's called Come Ahead. It's a big record. It's got kind of like a big gospel sound. It sounds pretty interesting. Let's play the opening cut. This is Ready to Go Home.
Yeah, that's not what I expected. I mean, you described it very well.
Yeah, different than their previous efforts, for sure. But it sounds pretty cool so far. I'm curious. There's a couple of cringy moments on it, but I do have faith in them. So, what you been digging on, Don?
Nice. Well, I got a couple in my Trapper Keeper.
Nice. There you go.
Nice one.
So, the band Mogwai, they're a Scottish band. I feel like I don't know all of their catalog, but I feel like they're like completely instrumental, sort of moody, very Cure sounding. Anyway, they have an album coming out called The Bad Fire at the beginning of next year, January 24th. Here's a track called Lion Rumpus.
I've never heard a song about a lion's ass before.
Well, that certainly reminds me of one. It's cool. I didn't know you were a Mogwai fan, Don.
Yeah, Mogwai.
Just don't play the album after midnight.
Don't get it wet.
All right, and you know, in keeping with what I've been doing recently, finding some goodies to put in your Christmas stocking or some coal. Ben Folds, right? Remember we brought him up earlier. He has a new holiday album. It's not with the Five. It's just Ben Folds. The album's called Slayer. But it's spelled with E-I-G-H.
Okay.
This is his fifth solo album. Mostly originals, actually, which I respect. Here's a track called Sleepwalking Through Christmas. Sleepwalking Through Christmas.
Very pleasant. Sounds just like he did back in the 90s.
Yeah. I feel like I'm drowning slowly.
Nice. Like a brick?
Yeah.
All right, dude, what's in your Star Wars lunchbox?
I did have a Star Wars lunchbox.
I had Disney's The Black Hole. Do you remember? Did you ever see that movie?
Oh, wow. I always wanted to see that. I had a folder with that image on it. I never knew what it was about.
It does not hold up.
Not great, no.
Yeah, I watched it recently. It was not good. Not really. It made me angry.
Speaking of space, I went with an album called Songs for a Nervous Planet, kind of like from the Big Chair, Tears for Fears. It was just released a month or so ago. Features 18 live tracks recorded during their Tipping Point World Tour and then 5 new studio tracks. Let's check out a little bit of Astronaut.
Sounds very different.
The new songs definitely have their own sound. Their sound has changed, obviously, since the 80s, but there was some mixed reaction to the album cover because apparently it was made by AI and fans were upset about that, which I don't quite understand. And then my LP, my vinyl selection, album I just recently picked up, is The Killers' Pressure Machine from 2021, 7th studio album, and it draws inspiration from small town America that frontman Brandon Flowers grew up in. When we listen to a bit of Quiet Town. Now, I'm not really a Killers guy, but I love this album.
Yeah, it's so good.
Got a Springsteen-y storytelling, small town vibe, and they just nail it. It was my favorite album that year, or close to it.
Yeah.
So what are you digging? Let us know. Join us on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Also on our website, albumnerds.com.
It will be a discovery of extraordinary value.
Well, it's about that time on the show when I'm reminded of the great American poet and civil rights activist Maya Angelou, who said, "Most people don't grow up. Most people age. They find parking spaces, honor their credit cards, get married, have children, and call that maturity. What that is aging." With that in mind, let's bring out my friend and yours, Wadbot, to see what we'll be discovering on next week's episode.
The movies are a wonderful way to escape reality, learn something new, or simply be entertained. The music featured in movies, or soundtracks, often help to tell the story and makes a great album experience all its own. Next time you will explore movie soundtracks.
Ooh. I love soundtracks. Yeah, trying to find the threads of a movie story in the songs of a soundtrack or recapture the moments of that movie. That'll be fun.
I'm calling it now. Dirty Dancing.
No one puts Donnie in a corner.
But people do hoist him up and spin around the room.
Yeah. We tried that a few times when we were living together. It did not work.
Maybe just got to flip the equation there. But Don, lift you up.
What's your favorite movie soundtrack? What else are you listening to? Leave a comment on our website or email us at podcast@albumnerds.com. Also, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Album Nerds. And please subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app. And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so via PayPal at albumnerds.com/support.
Thank you for joining us here on the Album Nerds Podcast. We'll catch you next time with some engaging soundtracks.
Thanks for listening, everybody. See you next week.
Well, I had the time of my life, and I never felt this way before.
Never felt this way.
Well, I swear.
It's true.
Yeah.